Introduction. Every once in a while, I do a book that is not my own idea. This is one of them. I particularly want you all to know that it is not my own idea, so let me explain to you how it all came about. Back in 1964, Dr. Howard Gottlieb of the Boston University Library got the notion of collecting my papers. The BU Library specialized in 20th century American authors, under which heading I fall. What's more, I was, and still am, a member of the Boston University faculty, so it seemed particularly appropriate to include me. This struck me at the time as a grotesque idea. I considered my papers to be junk, and I still believe that today in my heart of hearts. Whenever they accumulated to an uncomfortable degree, I burned them in the barbecue pit in the backyard of my house in Newton, Massachusetts. I used that barbecue pit for nothing else. When I said as much to Dr. Gottlieb, he was horrified. He explained to me the importance of contemporary records of important literary figures, and apparently when he used that phrase, he meant me. He also described the vast number of students of literature who would gain their much-desired PhDs as a result of their meticulous studies of my first drafts, and how useful this would be to aspiring authors of centuries and millennia hence. I believe none of this, but Dr. Gottlieb was, and is, one of the sweetest and nicest men ever invented by a creative deity, assuming the existence of one, and I hadn't the heart to disappoint him. So I gave him all the material I could find that had escaped the barbecue pit, and then began sending him additional material as it accumulated. He received copies of all the books I published in every edition I could get hold of, book club, paperback, foreign, etc. I sent him manuscripts, both first drafts and final copies. I sent him all my correspondence and fan mail. I sent him an intact copy of every magazine that had an essay or story of mine in it, so that, for instance, he now has about 20 years' worth of the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, 10 years of American Way, and every copy of Isaac Asimov's Science Fiction magazine. It's all stored in a special vault. The accumulated material over these last 20 years and more is mountainous and is growing steadily. Every couple of weeks I lug a mass of assorted papers, magazines, and books to Doubleday and Company, which very kindly mails it to Isaac's vault. I try not to think of it. Some poor soul in Dr. Gottlieb's office must be forced to go through it all and arrange it and classify it and file it in some rational way so that any particular piece of paper can be found quickly on demand. I know. There have been a few times when I have wanted something and they located it for me at once. I also fear the ultimate result. That vault can only hold so much. Someday it will explode, and I can imagine the headline in the Boston Globe. Asimov vault explodes. Commonwealth Avenue devastated. 20 killed. Hundreds hurt. And it will be all my vault. That gives you the first portion of the story behind this book. Carry on. In the last 5 years or so, I have taken to editing anthologies of various kinds and in great numbers. I have, as of now, over 80 such anthologies to my credit. Naturally, this sort of nefarious activity is well beyond my abilities. You will not be surprised, then, to hear that in almost all cases I have co-conspirators at my side. The two most loyal and accommodating of these are Martin Harry Greenberg and Charles G. Waugh. Marty lives in Wisconsin, Charles lives in Maine, and I live in Manhattan. So we are well spread out. We maintain contact by means of letters, phone calls, and occasional visits. They make the visits. I don't travel. It's an ideal anthological conspiracy. Charles has an enormous collection of publications and an infallible memory for everything he has read, and is deeply in love with a photocopying machine. He can therefore supply us with any kind of stories we want. As for Martin, he has an uncontrollable passion for writing for permissions, for taking care of all records, and for the receiving and sending out of all checks. He also visits editors for the purpose of hypnotizing them into agreeing to additional anthologies by the dozen. That leaves me only the task of reading the stuff they send me, making decisions as to what goes where, writing introductions and occasional headnotes, and delivering the manuscripts to the various publishers, since almost all of them are virtually within walking distance of my home, if it is a nice day. Naturally, Marty and Charles have developed a proprietary interest in me. You will therefore understand that once, a couple of years ago, when Charles was visiting Boston, one of the sights he intended to see was Dr. Asimov's vault. Charles is a quintessential WASP and will not address me by my first name, though I repeatedly urge him to. Marty, who is no more a WASP than I am, is more relaxed. I don't know how long Charles spent in the vault, breathing in the invigorating odor of old paper and poring over dead items of Asimovianna, but it seems he came across some material I had long forgotten. I'm not sure that the material deserves the name of curiosa, but it was certainly curious. What particularly interested Charles was that he came across some old versions of a few well-known stories of mine that were, for one reason or another, markedly different from those same items as later published. It seemed to him that there might be some reader interest in these old versions. He even made a list of the relevant items. He mentioned this the next time he spoke to Marty, and Marty mentioned it to me the next time he spoke to me. Marty even had a name for the book, The Alternate Asimovs. My reaction was immediate and enthusiastic. "Marty," I said, "you're crazy." He said, "May I mention it to Doubleday?" "Go ahead," I said, laughing heartily. I was sure they would chase him out of the office to the accompaniment of streams of opprobrious language. Serve him right, I thought. Either I had underestimated Marty's persuasiveness, however, or the good nature of Kate Medina, my then editor at Doubleday, or both, because the next thing I knew, I found myself staring at a contract. Muttering imprecations under my breath, I wrote to good old Howard at the BU library, and the next thing I knew, I had piles of old paper on my desk representing some of the items Charles had mentioned. You understand, then, why I disclaim this book. Some of you may think, well, there goes Asimov and his inordinate vanity, thinking anyone would be interested in his old junk. But it's not so. The fault is entirely that of Howard Gottlieb, Charles Wall, Martin Greenberg, and Kate Medina. Still, having read this far while standing in the bookstore and browsing, you might as well pay your money and take the book home with you. I wouldn't want Howard, Charles, Martin, and Kate to be disappointed in their notion that you would be interested.